with pressure.
Should they score?
I felt like I did all the right things to prepare for this game.
We had Patrick Crosby score.
Give them 20 minutes a room where they can make a bleed for it, and we did.
He doesn't sign with Winnipeg Jets in the next couple of weeks. No player will be more coveted.
Dustin Byfuglien posted it in. It's a rocket of a shot.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Intercepted by Letestu, back across the line, winds up, slap shot, kicked away, rebound, they score! Laine shot it in his own net! Patrick Laine shot the rebound into his own net, and it's 3-2 Edmonton.
And a disastrous weekend for the Winnipeg Jets ends on a sour note as Patrick Laine, the game-winning goal for the Edmonton Oilers, unfortunately, as the Winnipeg Jets drop both games earlier this week in Alberta, a disgraceful performance on Saturday night against the Calgary Flames, a better performance but a similarly weak result on Sunday against the Edmonton Oilers. Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week, 2 hours of hockey talk for you. On this Wednesday night, I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues Ezra Ginsberg. Joel Marcoux joins us, producer Rory, doing the great job behind the board. Gentlemen, I say good evening to you both. Manitoba Moose just dropped a decision in Charlotte, so it has not been winning times for the local hockey teams. The Jets, of course, coming off of a disgraceful weekend in Alberta, as I mentioned. They get back on the ice for the first time today as they practice getting ready for a game tomorrow evening against the Florida Panthers, but we look back starting with Saturday and Sunday in Alberta. Ezzy, on Saturday's IC Hockey Show, you said that the Jets had to win both those games because of what happened earlier last week against the Red Wings and the Rangers, where they only took one out of a possible 4 points. Well, they did not heed your advice, unfortunately. I would say that that performance in Calgary, certainly there have been some bad performances this year, but I think that performance in Calgary, that second period in Calgary, getting down 5-0 to the Calgary Flames, may very well have been the worst performance of the season for the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, and it was really disappointing, as you said, Drew, and they come back with no points from that mini two-game road trip in Alberta, and certainly the game against the Calgary Flames, guys, was the more disappointing result, because when you look at that game against the Edmonton Oilers and, you know, Chris Sniper Thorburn scores that goal, it looks like the Jets might hang on there in the third period for the one-goal victory. But, you know, Edmonton ties it up. Zach Cassian looked like he tied it up. But then that goal was called back. Mm-hmm. And then the Edmonton Oilers win it on that fluky goal. And, you know, we played that audio
fluky
clip. Yeah, well,
I don't know if that's a fluke.
It was top shelf.
Top shelf.
Yeah.
Labeled.
Yeah. You know, and, you know, guys, give Patrick Laine credit. And he addressed the media after the game.
Sure.
And he addressed the media today. Mm-hmm. And when he was asked about it today, he said, what happened on Sunday, right? So, I mean, this happens to everybody, and that game could have easily gone the Jets' way. It maybe wasn't their best performance of the season, but they were up there in the third period, and I thought that Connor Hellebuyck played really well. He's had just terrible luck against the Edmonton Oilers and just hasn't played well, but certainly disappointing two games here, Drew, and you're right. I did think that the Jets had to win these two games because, you know, after that game against the New York Rangers where they got no points, they lost a point against the Detroit Red Wings, you know, they had to pick up 4 points here. At the very least, they had to get three. So you've got four games coming up before the Christmas break. You've got Florida coming up. You've got Colorado on Sunday, and then you've got Vancouver twice on the road. I think they have to win three of those four games at the very least so they get back above 500.
It's not real 500, well, but keep going.
At the very least, they get those points back, guys, because where they stand right now, you know, 3 or 4 days ago they were sitting in that last wild card spot, and now they've fallen to 11th, and a bunch of the other teams, Nashville, L.A., those teams are catching up to them now. So, you know, it's a very difficult time for the Jets right now, and 32 games into the season, they're already into must-win territory.
For sure.
They have to beat Florida tomorrow night, Joel.
What is it, 4 wins in their last 14 when you put it all together? I mean, just going back to this weekend, what was worse, guys, that game at Calgary or that Boston game a few Saturdays before?
The Calgary game was worse in my mind. The Boston game was...
Boston was a total mess.
You know, Boston was a bad performance. I thought the Calgary game was an embarrassment. And I know that it's sort of hard to distinguish between the two, and it's hard to, you know, that's a difficult pie to slice and whatnot. But I thought the Calgary team, you know, afterwards, and, you know, Rory, you got Paul Maurice after where he was asked about effort, or a reporter started to ask him about effort, and Maurice cut him off. Here's Maurice from Saturday night talking post-game about the Jets' performance.
Well, we had some odd man rushes and weren't very good.
Disappointing, Paul. I know that's a silly worry, but I mean, you couldn't have envisioned this kind of an effort when you were talking about the way your club is
playing. Be real careful about the effort word here. We were behind the game, you know, the entire night. So,
how about the first period?
It was all right. I think the shot attempts were about even. It was all right.
Is this one where you feel bad for the goaltenders?
No.
Is your team just getting tired?
No. We were tired 3 weeks ago.
Any comments on the schedule?
Really pleased with it. Enjoying it. Really taking it all in.
Good to play tomorrow where you can just wipe this one away?
Well, we'd like to get tomorrow the next day if we could. Right. That we'd enjoy.
Paul Maurice from Saturday night.
That's excellent.
Couple things about that. One, Calgary's played one fewer game than the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah.
Shut up about the schedule.
Well, Drew, there was a touch of sarcasm in his answers.
Of course there was. But, you know, the Calgary Flames, I'm saying, you know, he's complaining about the schedule in his answer. Yeah. You know, but the Flames have played one fewer game than the Winnipeg Jets at this point in the season.
If the players in PA want to continue with this bye week, which I guess we'll find out at the end of the year,
this is the schedule.
This is the schedule. Yeah, we're not going to have the World Cup every year, but this will still be the schedule. They're going to have the All-Star break, this bye week. I mean, coming up in the back half of the season, the Habs have 24-47. The Wild have 16-29. I mean, everybody's going to have this grinding stretch. The Jets just so I'm going to have it right out of the gate, 32-60, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Who cares? Now it's over. Now they had 3 days off now for the first time since, what was it, late October now that they had back-to-back days off. You know, refresh, refuel, get a nice practice in today. And then, like, as you touched on it, welcome the Panthers tomorrow, and you're back into, you know, you don't want to say must win, but you want to get back in the W column.
I would say it is must win at this point in the season. I know what you are saying too, Joel, but going back to that, I don't know which reporter asked him about the effort on Saturday night, and Maurice cuts him off and says, well, no, I don't, be careful about using the effort word. I'll use the effort word. The effort wasn't there. The effort wasn't there. Calgary's played as much hockey as the Winnipeg Jets. They beat the Jets. They scored 5 unanswered goals. They scored 4 goals in 9 minutes in the second period.
Well, and you know,
that's an effort thing.
Those 4 goals happened in about a 9-minute span. Yeah. 3 of those 4 goals were even strength. So it's not like the Jets took a string of bad penalties and the Flames, you know, scored two or three of those on the power play. They scored a power play goal in the third period. But Dougie Hamilton, both of his goals were even strength.
Yeah.
And we actually talked about Dougie Hamilton on Saturday and how underrated a season he's having. But,
sure.
I mean, you had to win that game. And I almost, you know, go back to what I said. Not only did I think that they had to win both games, I said that they had to win that Calgary game to take some of the pressure off of beating in order to, you know, take some pressure. They had to win that game because Edmonton's already beat the Jets twice this year. Now 3 times this year, Drew.
Sure.
But I mean,
at least you're done with the Oilers now.
The time for excuses is over. What? I mean, after these next set of games here before the Christmas break, the Jets are going to have played 36 games, so the season's almost half over. Mm-hmm. And like Joel said, I mean, every team goes through these stretches where they play a lot of games in a short amount of time. And for the Jets, it happened in November. You know, they've got 3 days off. So what happens if the Jets don't beat the Panthers tomorrow night? Are they going to blame rest?
They might as well, because they blamed too many games. They blamed being tired on all the losses. But, to your point, Ezzy, and about all the teams, and they all play the same, you know, everybody's schedule started pretty much on the same day. Everybody's schedule is going to end on the same day, and you're going to play 82 games in between. The Philadelphia Flyers, we'll talk about the Metropolitan Division later on in the show. The Philadelphia Flyers just played 7 games in 11 nights. You want to know how many of those 7 games they won? All of them. They won every single one of the games. So they're winning 7 games in 11 nights. So don't talk to me about the schedule.
The Winnipeg Jets.
Don't talk to me about the schedule.
I agree with you, Drew. Tomorrow night, the Jets have to come out as soon as that puck is dropped, and they have to be skating their buns off for all 60 minutes. They need that W. They need to get back into the win column. There's so much negative energy, I think, around this team right now. I really do believe that. You know, Joel mentioned
from the team or from the fans?
Well, no, I think around the team, and I think that partly explains why they're having such trouble in the middle of games. They have to be better in the second period. This isn't like a problem that's just, you know, like it's a problem that's been there the entire season.
Sure.
They have these lulls in the second period. They let teams back into the game, or in this case, they weren't even in the lead. Calgary took the 4-0 lead there after two periods. I think it's effort. It's absolutely preparation. They have to be better. They can't just come out and have a good start and then expect to hang on to the lead. They really got to come out there and have a very impressive game against the Panthers.
When you give up four goals, four regulation strength goals, as you mentioned, when you give up four regulation strength goals in 9 minutes and 23 seconds, in this day and age in the NHL, where goals are quite hard to come by, it's an effort thing. It's effort. You don't give up four in 9:23 if you're giving 110% effort. Because there's a lot of bad teams in the NHL, and we've seen them.
Sprinkled in with, dare I say, the inability to maybe make a key save every once in a while.
Certainly the goaltending was not, I mean, I thought all the goals were legitimate goals.
Not putting the spotlight of negativity on the guy between the pipes, but let's face it, mixing in a save when it's needed doesn't hurt.
You're absolutely right, because go back to that Detroit game a couple weeks ago, where the Jets had that 3-1. Good first period where they're up 3-1. They needed a save from their goaltender to maintain the lead, and they didn't get it. So you're right. Sometimes with goaltending, it's not the number of saves, it's the timeliness of the big saves.
Sure, and that game wasn't all Michael Hutchinson's fault, but you couldn't...
No, he was great in the first half of the game.
He was, and he gets pulled, and he didn't have his best game, but the team didn't play well. And guys, to me, it goes back to what I said before. Nashville and L.A. have now passed the Jets, and they have four games in hand on the Jets.
Yeah.
So the Jets have to start picking up wins here. They've got four games, as I mentioned, coming up before the Christmas break, two in Vancouver next week, and then Florida and Colorado here.
These are the schedules you can get.
Well, and by the way, these are all winnable games. Florida's going to come into Winnipeg tomorrow night. Well, they're already in Winnipeg, but they're going to go out there. And they're desperate for a win as well, so the Jets are going to have to be sharp. But, I mean, the season is quickly slipping away here. I mean, the Jets need to get points. If they want to get to 90 points, which is the playoff line it looks like this year, they're going to have to win 60% of their games.
They have seven games left before 2017 starts.
Yep.
Seven games in the next 17 days. They almost have to win all seven of them. And if you go six and one, you know, you've done okay.
Well, again, and it goes back to what we were talking about before, guys. Look at Calgary. Calgary's won six games in a row now.
Yeah, 8-1-1 in their last 10.
And you look at before they won those six games in a row, they were kind of around, 10th or 11th in the Western Conference. So the Jets can turn this around.
You got to go on a heater.
Absolutely. You have to go on a streak here. You got to pick up a win against Florida, beat Colorado, and go into Vancouver. Vancouver's not a very good team. They gave up eight goals last night to Carolina. I don't know if you guys saw that game, but Vancouver's not a very good team, so the Jets can do this.
Is it the losses that's bugging you or the effort that's linked to that loss? Because they're 13-16-3. Going into the season, at this point, what were you expecting them to be?
Well, I predicted that the Jets would make the playoffs this year.
Yeah, but at this point... Should it be 16-13-3?
I thought they'd have probably five or six more points.
Yeah.
And when you look at some of the games, even as recent as the Detroit game where they easily could have got 2 points, the game against the Rangers where they could have easily got 2 points, Drew Stafford takes that penalty and then the Rangers win it a one-goal game. I think that this team, it's a frustrating team to watch, by the way, right now, because you look at what guys like Patrick Laine, Nikolaj Ehlers, and Mark Scheifele are doing, and... they're top 20 in the league in scoring, but this team can't put together three straight good periods.
You know what's frustrating from my perspective? It's that it's year six, and it's the same story. And it was the same story under Claude Noel, and it's the same story under Paul Maurice. It's the inconsistency. It's the stupidity. It's the games that make you rip your hair out of your skull. It's the games where you say to yourself, why are they so listless? Why is the effort not look like it's there?
Hey, Drew, you're wearing a Chicago Cubs shirt. If they can win the World Series, the Jets can get in the playoffs here and win a round.
I think fans just want to see they look at the roster and they say, this is a decently talented team.
Well, and again, injuries...
And why can't it play like that? A decently talented team that handled the Chicago Blackhawks easily.
Right, and injuries have played a part in that, and youth has played a part in that.
Sure.
But, to Joel's point, I mean, I did think they would be better. I didn't think they'd necessarily be, you know, first or second in the Western Conference, but I certainly thought that they would be in a better position than they are now, and I think that this team can be better. But
yeah,
if they want to show that they're going to be better, they're running out of games here, because we can't say the season's early anymore. You've played 32 games, and you've got some games coming up here against teams that are also desperate. Florida's right in the middle of a playoff race. They're not having a very good start to the season.
If you don't go 6-1, 5-1-1 between now and New Year's Eve, the season's over.
And I'll tell you what, you won't even do that unless you can A, stay out of the box, or B, shore up your special teams.
Sure.
Dozen games. I was just looking at the schedule quickly here. There's about a dozen games that they lost by one, a couple of them by two goals, but empty netter.
Yeah.
You know,
In
those 1-2 goal games, power play, 3-for-37, PK, 34 out of 44. So you do the math, that's an 8% power play, 77% PK.
Bottom of the league in both categories.
Exactly. And add in a couple of extra power play goals, kill off a few extra PKs, that could swing that one goal game in a different direction, right?
Absolutely, it could. The Jets' opponent tomorrow is the Florida Panthers. They might be the only organization in more disarray than the Winnipeg Jets organization right now. We'll talk about the Panthers. We're not sure who the general manager is. It might be you, Ezzy. We'll talk about it next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
It's a bad loss. We didn't generate enough scoring chances. We had some real shot, and we get it, but our shots were from the outside. We didn't have enough guys going to the net, so it's just a part of the game we're going to have to continually work on. And guys have got to understand, if you're going to play in the National Hockey League, you're going to show up every single day. You can't show up when you feel like it.
Interim Florida Panthers coach Tom Rowe.
Interim head coach.
He is their interim head coach. He's, I guess, still their general manager. I'm not 100% sure. We'll talk about that. The Panthers in town to play the Jets tomorrow evening. This segment of NHL This Week brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information or to make an appointment, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So let's just update the audience about the latest saga regarding the Florida Panthers. So if you remember, about 2 weeks ago, 2.5 weeks ago, Gerard Gallant was their head coach. He was a finalist for the Jack Adams Trophy last season. Got fired after a loss in Carolina. The team was off to, I would describe it as a middling start, but most outside observers would have said, given the injuries, the litany of injuries, mm-hmm. they've had a ton of injuries, it was an okay start given their injuries. Mm-hmm. Management ownership decides, nope, they fire Gerard Gallant. Who do they hire? Tom Rowe, who had been their general manager, comes down from the general manager's booth and is going to be the interim head coach of the Florida Panthers for the remainder of the season. But he was also going to continue to do some of his duties as the general manager. Okay. Since then, continued poor performances by the Florida Panthers. 2-3-3 since Tom Rowe took over behind the bench. A very embarrassing defeat last night in Minnesota, where they lose 5-1 to the Minnesota Wild. They'd been down 5-0, and they get one cheap goal at the end of the game. That's where you just heard Tom Rowe's comments. Also this offseason, Dale Tallon, who had been their general manager,
comedy hour, eh?
Was quote-unquote promoted to president of hockey operations. Most people, from the outside point of view, said that the promotion was in title only. People thought that Dale Tallon was not going to be as heavily involved in the day-to-day business of running the Florida Panthers.
Demoted up.
Like Elaine on Seinfeld, where she promotes the guy rather than fire him because she's afraid of him.
Yeah.
Are you using a Seinfeld analogy for the Florida Panthers' current situation?
I am.
Okay.
Earlier today, after the debacle that the Panthers had in Minnesota and the poor stretch since Tom Rowe took over, earlier today they parachuted Dale Tallon back into the role of general manager on a day-to-day basis for the Florida Panthers.
Well, right, and those two things that you just mentioned are directly related, right? Because Tom Rowe is now the interim head coach, so he doesn't have as much time to vote to his general manager duties.
Sure.
So I agree with you. I mean, Dale Tallon, to whatever degree you want to say, was pushed aside a little bit for Tom Rowe to take over the day-to-day operations of this team. I think we'd all agree with that.
I would certainly agree. Let me just finish one thing before I let
you
go.
And now they're bringing him back.
But the Panthers, for whatever reason, are now fighting that story, saying there's been no change, that Dale Tallon is continuing to fulfill the role that he had been fulfilling all along, even though most people that, you know, are, let's say, arm's length away from the Panthers organization, but fairly in tune. Darren Dreger's no fool. When Darren Dreger comes out with a report that says Tallon is back in that role as general manager, he's pretty informed when he says that he wasn't there before. The Panthers are fighting back against that, saying, no, it's status quo. Tallon has been doing this all along.
Well, that's why these titles, Drew, and when you get into semantics, it gets a little bit confusing here. When you think of, you know, the Toronto Maple Leafs, you think of Brendan Shanahan and Lou Lamoriello, and, you know, Kyle Dubas is in there as well. But certainly Brendan Shanahan and Lou Lamoriello are the major decision makers there. And Shanahan's title is president of hockey operations, and you got Lamoriello, who's general manager. Everyone would agree, though, that Brendan Shanahan has more power than Lou Lamoriello. But when you look at the Florida Panthers, I mean, for me, it's not maybe as complicated or, you know, mysterious as some people think. I think that, you know, Tom Rowe right now, because he's the interim head coach, Dale Tallon, as you mentioned, Darren Dreger tweeted this out, he's going to actively manage the day-to-day operations of this team. That's what Tom Rowe was doing before. He doesn't have the time.
Sure.
And by the way, I think this is a great move.
I think it's a great move, too. What I can't for the life of me figure out is why the Panthers, rather than saying, okay, yeah, this is what we've done, are now fighting back. And they're focusing on, you know, we're not in complete disarray. We're not, you know, changing things on the fly.
I thought
Darren Dreger's wrong. We're going to fight Darren Dreger. Yeah. He's the real enemy in this battle.
I thought it was pretty clear during the summertime when Tallon was named president of whatever that it was a change in philosophy.
Yep.
Sure, because that's what got Gerard Gallant fired, is supposedly the philosophy. They were very the organization wanted to be heavily analytical based, and Gallant didn't believe in that.
I think there's more to it than that.
So they demoted Tallon
up. I don't think it's all about that, by the way.
Well, probably not.
Okay, so if you're demoting Tallon up because of there's a change in philosophy, why are you now bringing him back in to make these decisions when the whole reason why you demoted him up was to change that philosophy so that you can go in this new path, they were trying to cover?
I think because the organization was in disarray, and from the outsider's point of view, they needed a steady hand.
A PR move?
They needed a steady hand, and Dale Tallon is certainly a steady hand who knows how to run a hockey organization. And, I mean, of course Tom Rowe didn't have time to do both. He's the coach and the general manager. Nobody can be both in this day and age in the NHL. So bringing Dale Tallon back in only makes sense, is only a good PR move. But don't tell me that he's been there all along, because nobody buys that.
Well, and then what happens if they bring in an actual head coach at the end of the year?
Well, then I think Dale Tallon goes back to his role as president of hockey operations.
Well, you know, just to address what you said, Drew, I don't necessarily know that this team is in disarray. I mean, when you look at where they are in the standings right now, and you mentioned when they fired Gerard Gallant, the Florida Panthers were 10-9-1, and you mentioned they're 2-3-3 or 2-3-2 since Tom Rowe, 2-3-3. So certainly the coaching change hasn't really changed the fortunes of this team, unfortunately. They were in the middle of a road trip at the time that Tom Rowe took over here, but they're certainly in danger of missing the playoffs. There are some parallels between the Panthers and the Jets right now.
Absolutely, I think there are.
Well, the Panthers, I mean, they won the division last year. The Jets didn't make the playoffs last year, so in that sense, it's dissimilar, but I think it's similar in the sense that there were higher expectations for this team. Maybe not winning the division again, but certainly being a playoff team. If you go back to our season preview show, I picked the Panthers to go to the Stanley Cup Finals. So as far as, you know, what's going on off the ice, there's more than meets the eye. There's stuff that we're not aware of. But I think right now, Drew, similar to the Jets, this team needs wins. I mean, the Florida Panthers need wins here, and they have a lot of players that are struggling right now. Jonathan Huberto has been out of the lineup the entire season. Guys like Alexander Barkov and Vincent Trocheck have struggled. They're big guns. You know, even Aaron Ekblad, who they gave the big 8-year deal to, you know, he's only got 9 points in 30 games. They expected more out of him. The goaltending has been so-so. So I think, you know, right now, they need wins on the ice. What's going on off the ice, and analytics and all that stuff? I mean, I think a lot of that is a media creation, by the way.
No, I think that was why Dale Tallon was removed from that position, is that they wanted to go into a more analytical, organization.
I think that's part of it. I don't think that's all of it.
So if Tallon's the guy who brought a lot of these guys in, I mean, his fingerprints are all over this roster.
Yeah.
Did they bring him back in just to maybe calm some of these players down who think that this is turning into a circus?
Probably. They think that that Vinny Viola and Doug Sifu had done a good job sort of stabilizing the Florida Panthers organization from some of the previous regimes that were there, where it was a tire fire. Mm-hmm. And so I think what has happened is they've made some missteps this season. And they're probably honest missteps, in that they wanted to run the organization how they wanted to run it. And that's one of the beauties of being an owner, is you get to run your team however you want to run it.
Yeah.
But in the course of those missteps, I think there was some collateral damage that was damaging their brand again after they've worked so hard to build it back up and resuscitate the brand, that what they decided to do is they brought Dale Tallon back down because he's a steady hand. And so whatever you think of Dale Tallon, whatever you think of the decisions the Panthers have made thus far this year, by having Tallon there mm-hmm. for the next 50 games of the season, it should calm the waters. The players can focus on playing. Yep. Rowe can focus on coaching. Dale Tallon and the assistant general managers can focus on the managerial side of things, and it'll be more stable. So bringing Dale Tallon closer to your organization is only a good decision.
Right.
It's been the process to get there, from promoting them sort of outside of the day-to-day organization to firing their coach to splitting the duties and everything else, that's been a rocky road.
It still doesn't make sense.
It was an error in judgment, I think, is what happened, is that if they were going to make significant moves in the off season regarding their head coach and regarding Dale Tallon, they should have made them all at the same time. Doing it piecemeal, Tallon, Gallant in the middle.
Well, Gerard
of the year.
Gallant wasn't hired by Tom Rowe.
Of course he wasn't.
Right? So Dale Tallon hired Gerard Gallant.
Right.
But again, I mean, let's be honest. Nobody expected Gerard Gallant to be fired. You mentioned it at the beginning of the segment. First off, Gerard Gallant was a very good assistant coach with mm-hmm. the Montreal Canadiens and other teams, the Detroit Red Wings. He's coming off of being a finalist for the Jack Adams Trophy. The Florida Panthers win the division.
Which is not a good thing, by the way. Whenever you're in that hunt, you're usually getting canned.
Well, it might be the case.
Coaches are hired to be fired.
But I mean, certainly we didn't expect it to play out like this with Tom Rowe taking over behind the bench. But this is the situation they're in. They've decided to bring Dale Tallon in back more of a day-to-day type of role. And, you know, they've got to turn it around here quickly, because you look at some of the way the Eastern Conference teams are playing right now, Philadelphia, Columbus. These teams in the Metropolitan Division, they're not losing. So, yeah. You know, Florida's got to pick up wins, and they've got to get them hurt pretty quickly.
I think one thing we can agree upon about the Florida Panthers, their professional scouting has never been better. Let's go to break. George Richards of the Miami Herald joins us next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Joel Marcoux with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program from the Miami Herald, George Richards. George, good morning, good afternoon, rather good evening is what I meant to say, and welcome back to the program.
It's lunchtime, isn't it? Now, how you doing? What's going on?
I covered all the different times of the day, so I figured I'd get one eventually, right? How are things there in Florida? A little bit of chaotic tonight after, I guess, Back to the Future? Is that the best way to describe it right now?
Yeah, it's never boring around the Florida Panthers, I'll tell you that much. You know, with the report coming out today that Dale Talon may have gotten some more power within the organization, taken back some control of the hockey operations department after being bounced upstairs over the summer, the Panthers are saying there has been no change. We'll just have to wait and see what happens. Vinny Viola, the team owner, told Elliot Friedman that Dale has always had final say in hockey decisions, and I don't know if that's completely true. It didn't seem that way, but if that's what the owner says, then I guess so. But it didn't look that way from the outside.
George, why did they need to make this move? I mean, it's been a little bit of a rocky, let's say, last 3 weeks or so since they fired Gerard Gallant after that game in Carolina, and we all know the visuals that produced. So why tonight did they have to make this move to bring Dale Talon back? Well, you know, I'll say back as the general manager, despite what ownership might say regarding no change in the management structure.
Yeah, let's say if this has happened, the report that Dale Talon had a meeting with the owner Vinny Viola today and kind of got a little bit of the juice back as GM, maybe just to stabilize things a bit. I think you see the 8 games since Gerard Gallant was fired, and Dale Talon wouldn't have fired Gerard Gallant because I think they were pretty close in the same boat philosophy wise. They've only won twice in 8 games, and I think there's something there. The team doesn't look right. The team doesn't look like it's in sync for whatever reason. And I don't know if that's, I'm not blaming Tom Rowe. I think Tom Rowe is going to be a good hockey coach. I just think that so much change has been made, and then you change course 22 games into the season with no practice time, with no time to do all the things that Tom Rowe wants to do. It just looks like a convoluted mess at times. I mean, sometimes the Panthers look really good, and you're like, man, this is a pretty good hockey team. And at other times, they look like they did last night in Minnesota, where they just look pretty bad.
You know, George, you just mentioned that this team has been very inconsistent. And, you know, we've had you on the show many times over the years, and you've covered this team for many years, and they've won 13 of their first 30 games here. And, you know, all you have to do is look at the roster of this team and see all of the talent. They won the division last year. But what is it? Can you pinpoint one or two things? What's wrong with this team right now?
Well, the power play is one thing. They've only got 2 goals on the power play since the coaching change, and now they're dead last in the NHL. They've had too many games where they've had 3 or more power play chances and haven't scored on it, and that just sucks the life out of a team. I mean, their penalty kill's pretty good. Their goals against is pretty good, despite some of the blowout losses that they've had lately. They changed up the defensive, the personnel on their blue line. They've changed up the schemes, and numbers wise it looks good. You know, they're in the top 10 in goals allowed, but if you watch the games, it doesn't look too sharp. There's a lot of missed assignments. There's a lot of open space. Pucks aren't getting cleared away the way they used to be. And there's just, to pinpoint one thing, it's just hard to do. I mean, they haven't been able to score at the clip that they had hoped. They're not getting the production from players that they had gotten in the past. You look at on paper, their 4 lines look like they should be able to score, but on the ice, it just hasn't transpired. And last night was the second time in 3 games that they've gotten beaten 5-1, and that's hard to watch.
Bukestad, is he basically going through his training camp right now after having missed the first half of that season?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think he came back and he had a thing on his wrist where he struggled to shoot the puck a little bit. He's still getting into it. I think the one thing with a hand wrist injury, he was able to skate the whole time, so it's not like he came in out of shape. I think he was in good shape. And I just think, Bukestad's not scoring. A lot of guys aren't scoring. I think Jaromir Jagr and Sasha Barkov have kind of picked up the pace a little bit. But you look around the rest of the team, and guys that they're counting on just aren't putting the puck in the back of the net.
George Richards, our guest on NHL This Week. George covers the Florida Panthers for the Miami Herald. Jonathan Huberdeau, George, he's close to returning. Supposedly he's on the road trip here, you know, in Winnipeg with the team. You know, his addition, could that be the panacea that this team is looking for? You know, now that maybe Talon brings back that stability, getting Huberdeau back in the lineup, could that be sort of the ticket to returning to success for this Panthers organization and team?
Well, they hope so, but I think you can't put too much pressure on Jonathan Huberdeau. He's been a slow starter in the past, and that's coming in healthy and having an entire training camp. You know, a couple weeks ago, Gerard Gallant, just before he got fired, said that Jonathan Huberdeau is about 2 months away. So we're about probably, what, five weeks away from that. According to that loose timeline, the Panthers would love to have Jonathan Huberdeau back, but it's still a long road for him. I mean, you've got that tendon that he hasn't skated. He's barely been walking, so it's not like he's been on a treadmill or things of that nature, not with a walking boot. He's got to get back into shape. He's got to get back up into hockey speed. It takes time, especially when you don't win in this compressed schedule. Now coming up in January and February, things loosen up a little bit. You've got the All-Star break. You've got the bye week or whatever. You've got a couple days off, or maybe there could be some practice time for him. As far as they'd love to see him come back and be the guy he was last year. But to expect that, especially with what you've seen so far, I think that might be a reach. I think he can do it, absolutely. A very talented player, a very, very good player. And then playing with Yager and Barkov will definitely help assimilate him back into the lineup.
George, Roberto Luongo was in net for the Panthers in that loss against the Minnesota Wild. How would you assess the team's goaltending so far this season?
I think the goaltending has been fine. I think, Roberto Luongo has been playing at a high level. I think last night a lot of those goals, weren't his fault. I think the coverage in front of him wasn't very good. I think nobody works harder than Roberto Luongo to be the best he can be. I think he's still playing at a high level. I think when James Reimer has stepped in, he's been good at times. He's been fine. Goaltending is not the problem with the Panthers. I think you know, it's easy to look at the games against Pittsburgh and the games against Minnesota and say, geez, 10 goals in two games given up. But I think a lot of that just has to do with the cohesiveness of this team and just the way things are going for the Panthers right now. They just don't seem to have it right now. They got a nice win against Vancouver on Saturday. But other than that, they've just been struggling.
This Tom Rowe coaching experiment, still in its infancy, do you think it's going to stick around at the end of the year and going into next year?
Yeah, it's too early to say. People asked me that when he was hired, and I still don't know. I think the Panthers organization, the front office, really has a lot of trust and faith in Tom Rowe. Came on a couple years ago as coach of the AHL team and coached the Florida Panthers AHL team. In San Antonio and in Portland, and I think he's got the trust of their front office. I think he's a very smart hockey man. He's been he was a player in the league, and he's done a lot of things throughout the league. During his time with the Whalers and the Carolina Hurricanes, from being a scout and an assistant coach, and then working in the front office to being behind the bench, both in the AHL and the KHL. So he's a very experienced hockey guy, very smart hockey man. But whether this moves on through next, it's just who knows. I mean, let's see what happens this year. They've said repeatedly that Tom Rowe's the coach of this team through the end of the year, and then they'll assess things. I think he's going to get the benefit of the doubt just because of the work that they've done together. We'll just have to wait and see.
George Richards, our guest on NHL This Week. George covers the Florida Panthers for the Miami Herald. George, Aaron Ekblad, we're used to seeing him perform at such an elite level, and it hasn't been the same this year. Does he miss Brian Campbell playing alongside him, or is it, why Aaron Ekblad struggles so far this season?
Yeah, I think you just nailed it. I think playing with Brian Campbell and Willie Mitchell and and other guys that, that have been here and are no longer really helped Aaron Ekblad. I've said this before, from day one when he jumped into the Panthers lineup as an 18-year-old, it looked like the light bulb went off. I mean, he looked like a 5-6 year veteran out there, and he had only played, he'd never played in the NHL before. I think the talent level for Aaron Ekblad is through the roof. The Panthers rewarded him with the biggest contract they've ever given out. They gave him an 8-year contract extension, which kicks in next year. I just think all the changes and maybe some of the pressure, that's one reason why the Panthers were reluctant to make him the captain during the summer. They didn't want to put that added pressure onto him, being that he's a 20-year-old kid with, all the promise that he's got. I think he's going to be fine. We've been, the numbers haven't been there. I think some of his defensive play has been limited. At times he looks great. At other times he looks like he's fighting it a little bit. And that very well could be the changes in not only in the systems but with the personnel that he's been placed with.
George, Jets fans are going to see Jonathan Marchessault tomorrow night. He's tied for the team lead in points with 20. Is this the best value signing in the entire NHL?
Yeah, it's pretty good, huh? I mean, you bring this guy in, he struggled to crack the lineup in Tampa Bay and came to Florida with the promise that he'd get the opportunity to play on Florida's third or fourth line. And then Huberdeau gets hurt, and he's up there playing with Yager and Barkov and really, really took off. He's already got career highs in goals and assists and, playing very well for the Panthers. Great value signing. Now he's back on the third line now that unless they change things today, back where they thought he would be when they signed him with Colton Sevier and Nick Bjugstad. But, great signing, great find. Tampa Bay didn't want to lose him, but they couldn't offer him the playing time that Florida could, or at least the promise of that. And I think that's one reason why he headed south to Florida, to the Panthers. And it's paid off for both sides.
George, we'll let you go on this last question. We really appreciate you joining us this evening. A lot has been made about the Panthers and their use of analytics, so far this season. Are they doing anything really that revolutionary? Is that story sort of maybe blown a little bit out of proportion? Are they just maybe looking at analytics in a slightly different way than a lot of the other organizations are? Or is there truly something, are they turning the world on its head that we just don't know about as of yet?
I don't know about turning the world on its head, I think, but they are bringing it onto the ice maybe more so than some teams. I think that's one thing I heard about, Gerard Gallant. One of the things that he was starting to push back on was them telling him how to put together his lines and who to put those lines up against based on, what they'd seen over a, 10, 15, 20 game sample size. And I think Gerard Gallant kind of pushed back on that, like, no, that's not how you coach hockey. But so that's one of the things that I've heard Tom Rowe say that they look at all kinds of statistics, but it's not solely based on, the computer printout and the statistics that you've got over the years or even just, the small sample sizes that we've got this year. I think when you start assigning players to other, to defend other players or go against other teams using statistics, I think that is something that's a little bit different. I think a lot of times we've all looked at the spreadsheets and the splits and said, so-and-so really plays well against Winnipeg. Maybe let's get him a start and get him some extra shifts because he's played so well up there. They're just taking that to a much higher level and looking, breaking it down against, different players, different situations, 5-on-5, all kinds of different things. And it's not just Corsi and Fenn, it's all kinds of different things that they're looking at. So they're trying, in a salary cap world, in a small market, they're trying to get the most bang for their buck, and I think I can appreciate what they're doing with that. They're trying to utilize everything at their disposal, and they feel that analytics, as well as the good old eye test, watching film, seeing what a player can do on the ice, is only going to help them down the road.
George Richards covers the Florida Panthers for the Miami Herald. George, really appreciate your time and your insight into the Panthers. Thanks for joining us this evening.
All right, good talking to you. We'll see you later.
Likewise, George. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. When we come back, we discuss the mighty Metropolitan Division. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
The top five teams in the Metro, 17-1-0 last week. So who in this division isn't maybe as good as we're seeing right now?
You know, I hate to say the team that's won 9 games in a row might be the one I would choose out of that, the Philadelphia Flyers, but boy, they're playing really good hockey too, and I've said it for a long time. I think the Flyers have been on the upward trajectory for several years with all those good young players. The goaltending has been great. I think the Flyers, their best days are down the road a little bit more, and I would say the same for the Blue Jackets. The now teams are still the Rangers, the Penguins, and the Cavs.
The NHL Tonight guys chiming in about the mighty Metropolitan Division 10 minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back to NHL This Week here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. And of course, if you're looking for a place to watch the game, Bernstein's Deli, full volume, big screen TVs. Check it out. Great place to catch tomorrow night's Jets-Panthers game, Bernstein's Deli in the Cordon Village Mall.
You know, Drew, we were just talking about analytics with George Richards of the Miami
Herald.
How are
your sandwich analytics?
Oh, my sandwich Corsi is 100, Drew.
Your Illegal Curve Corsi, sandwich Corsi is really up there.
Fenwick, too. But, you know, you're mentioning the teams in the Metropolitan Division, and we're going to go through them here. But if you're looking for an advanced stat that's going to say the Philadelphia Flyers or the Columbus Blue Jackets aren't a good possession team, you're not going to find it. Because right now, the Philadelphia Flyers and the Columbus Blue Jackets are 12th and 13th in the NHL as far as team Corsi goes. Mm-hmm. So I don't think this is an aberration. I mean, these teams are playing very well, and we know that not every single team in the Metropolitan Division is going to make the playoffs, but certainly when you talk about the
top five might.
How about their goals for and goals against?
Well, but exactly. It's unbelievable, and they've played less games than many teams, Joel. And But when you talk about the Philadelphia Flyers, I mean, they made the playoffs last year.
Yeah.
And this is a team that finished very strong in the second half of the season under Dave Haxtell. So as far as I'm concerned, I think the Philadelphia Flyers are going to make the playoffs. If there is going to be a team that falls a little bit, I think it is going to be Columbus.
Look at Columbus's goals against, Desi.
I know.
57 goals against. They've given up the fewest goals in the entire NHL.
They're plus 33.
Yeah.
Wow. Tied with the Minnesota Wild. I mean, I don't know that the Columbus Blue Jackets are going anywhere.
That's why I picked them 1 year too early.
Yes, 1 year too early is definitely the wrong coach.
Well, that's
and
the thing. I think what they're doing right now is what a lot of people were expecting from this team last season.
Yes.
But then, of course, they had that 1-9, 1-10
start. 0-7, yep.
You know, Todd Richards, see you later. They had all these injuries, and they never recovered. This year, right out of the gate, first couple of games, you're wondering, who are these guys? And boom.
And I think, Joel, Drew. I was just going to say, I think it starts and ends with Officer Bobrovsky.
Yeah.
As Jay Onright used to say on TSN.
And torts. Sure.
As he ain't going to give torts any credit.
No, you know what? No. I was thinking about how I was going to do this here.
He's coming in a couple weeks, you know.
You
might be out of town.
I was wrong about torts. I actually am going to be in Mexico.
I think a lot of people were.
Maybe I shouldn't say where I'm going. But I am going to be out of town for that Columbus Blue Jackets game. But I was wrong about torts. I didn't think he was going to be a long-term fix there. I thought he was maybe going to coach 1 or 2 years. But I got to give torts credit. He's done an excellent job, and he's kept these guys practice time limited. I mean, this team is playing really well. And, you know, you look at some of that top-end talent, you know, whether that's a guy like Alexander Wennberg, who's still early on in his career. Nick Foligno's having a great year.
Atkinson.
Cam Atkinson's playing really well.
Yeah.
Matt Calvert scored a goal the other night. I mean, this team has a lot of depth.
Well, Zach Werenski is in the running for the Calder Trophy.
Yeah, exactly. He's in the running for the Calder Trophy, and Torts has got to be in the running for the Jack Adams. He might be the favorite right now.
I would suggest he is. I mean, I want to, you know.
And hey, Drew, I'm willing to admit I was wrong. I mean,
and we're willing to point out when you are wrong.
But I mean,
so
Torts won the Stanley Cup with the Tampa Bay Lightning, and he had the New York Rangers as a top team in the East for many years. Just those years, you know, with Vancouver and all of that, he lost his mind a little bit.
I agree. That was a bad situation. It ended poorly in New York, and it was a bad fit in Vancouver very, very early on there. That was painfully obvious. I just want to touch on this one more time. We heard it over top of the audio coming back from the break over top of the bed. Last week, the top five teams in the Metropolitan Division, Those top five teams are the Penguins, the Rangers, the Blue Jackets, the Capitals, and the Flyers.
Yep.
Went a combined 17-1-0.
Okay, I'm gonna answer your question.
That's incredible.
I'm gonna answer your question before you ask it. This is the best division in the NHL right now. It's usurped the Central.
That wasn't what I was gonna ask you.
Well,
I was
gonna
ask you what you had for dinner.
No, you weren't.
No, you wasn't.
When you're talking about this division, I think, Joel, you have to say it's the best division right now simply because Pittsburgh is the defending Stanley Cup champion, mm-hmm. and you have other teams in that division who remain at the top of this conference. New York Rangers, we mentioned, and you know, you're talking about the Philadelphia Flyers and the Columbus Blue Jackets. Both of those teams could very well make the playoffs the way they've played the first 30 games of the year. So as far as I'm concerned, Dallas has struggled a little bit this year. Nashville has struggled a little bit this year.
Sure.
This is the best division in hockey now.
I don't even think it's close, really.
It's well, the fastest, too.
I mean, Chicago and St. Louis are still really good teams, and Minnesota's been good. So I don't necessarily know by – I wouldn't say it's leaps and bounds the best division, but right now,
right.
30 games into the season, I think it is.
There's only three teams in the Central that are above 500 in terms of winning percentage. If you look at the Metropolitan, there's five teams that are above 500 in winning percentage. That tells me that they're a better division. You're right, Joel. The speed that these teams are playing with.
You watch the Metro play right now. It's crazy. The amount of speed that you're seeing out there.
Yeah.
You have not seen that in the West in a couple of years.
Yeah, we've already seen the Rangers beat the Jets twice this year. The Jets haven't played the Pens yet this year. They're going to play Columbus here coming up in about a week.
Yeah, 10 days.
But the Metro's been,
10 days. So.
The Metro's been good for a few years.
Yep.
We're noticing it right now.
This good. I mean, to have a season or to have a week where the top five teams
this
go.
This is unique. It's not going to keep up.
There are a grand total of 2 points separating the first-place Pittsburgh Penguins and the fifth-place Philadelphia Flyers.
Mm-hmm.
And of those five teams in the Metropolitan Division that I mentioned earlier, they're 3 points out of first place overall in the NHL. The Habs and the Blackhawks lead the NHL with 42 points each. And then you look at the Metropolitan Division, and they take up spots, you know, 3 through 8 in the entire
you know,
league.
You know who's loving this even more than Torts?
Who's that?
Gary Bettman.
Well, because these are all, well.
Well, you've got New York, which is the biggest market. You've got Philadelphia, which is also a huge market. Columbus struggled last year.
Yeah.
So that's a market that, you know, you want to be performing better.
I'll tell you what, he doesn't want a Columbus anybody Stanley Cup.
Well,
final,
no,
though,
but when you're talking about Pittsburgh, New York, and Philadelphia, those are key hockey markets for the NHL, right? So not that, you know, markets in Canada aren't as well. But certainly, I mean, I pick the Devils. I'm a little bit biased. They're sixth right now in the East, but the Islanders have been a big surprise how far they've fallen.
Well, the problem for the Devils, the Hurricanes, and the Islanders, none of those three teams are playing what I would describe as exceptional hockey. They're playing average hockey. The problem is they're just getting lapped.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The other teams in their division are playing. I mean, here the Penguins are 8-2 in their last 10. The Rangers, they are only average. They're 6-4 in their last 10. The Blue Jackets are 8-1-1 in their last 10. The Capitals are 7-2-1 in their last 10. And the Flyers are 9-1. They've won 9 games in a row.
Yeah, and Philadelphia and Colorado are playing as we speak. They could win 10 games in a row tonight.
Well, and that's a coach that nobody's talking about. You know, we talked a little bit about coaching. Dave Hakstol has made the leap from NCAA to NHL seamlessly.
Yep.
He was a hell of a coach at UND, North Dakota. We knew that. Having watched him and seen the success he had with the Fighting Sioux and then the Fighting Hawks. But what he's done in
Philadelphia... Well, he was never there for
the
Fighting Hawks.
There for the Fighting Hawks.
Yeah, Brad Berry was.
Brad Berry was, you're right, technically.
Or
but,
is.
Yeah, they're now the Fighting Hawks. How about that? But to go that seamlessly from the NCAA ranks to the NHL ranks is really incredible.
Oh, he's a great coach. We've had a chance to meet him before. And, I mean, you got to love what the Flyers are doing, Joel.
Yes.
And you got to love Ivan Provorov is having a great rookie year, former Wheatie. Travis Konechny's having a great rookie year. I mean, they've got a very mobile back end with Shane Gostisbehere there. Mark Streit is injured right now.
Giroux's on fire.
Simmons. Voracek's been good.
Simmons leads the league in power play goals.
Simmons is having a very underrated year. I mean,
Mason's back to doing what he does.
It's a good
team. He's
stolen
at least a couple of games during that winning streak.
Mm-hmm. It's a very tough team to play against. I mean, the Jets have already lost once to the Flyers this year. I mean, this team doesn't give you a lot when you play them. They've got one of the best offenses in the entire league. So it's great to see.
A great team and a great division, the Metropolitan, the mighty Metropolitan, something to keep an eye on through the remainder of the season. Hour one in the books. Hour two starts with Lisa Dillman of NHL.com. That's coming up next here on NHL This Week, live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
One hour in the books. The second hour starts now. You're listening to NHL This Week. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Joel Marcoux. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From NHL.com, she covers the Anaheim Ducks and the Los Angeles Kings. We're pleased to welcome back to the program Lisa Dillman. Lisa, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Our pleasure. First of all, I got to say, it sounds a little weird to my ears to say from NHL.com and not from the Los Angeles Times. How's the move been from, you know, the role of the, let's say, everyday beat writer to the mothership NHL.com?
Well, it is an interesting transition, especially when you've been doing something for, you know, almost 24 years, and making that change has been difficult for me, and my ears are adjusting too. And in fact, I've sort of had to retrain myself. I was working on a Peter Budaj feature that ran a couple days ago, and I called Dusty Emu, and I started to say, "Hey, Lisa Dillman, LA Times," and I stopped myself, and I started laughing. And so, you know, old habits die hard. And in fact, my very last assignment for the LA Times happened to be in Winnipeg, so I closed it out there. It was pretty cool.
I was in that scrum, actually, Lisa. I remember saying hi to you.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. And one of the team equipment guys gave me the game puck. I have it. On the mantle above my fireplace, and it was really nice. The team. I'd covered the Kings, you know, quite a few years off and on. I kept coming back. And they even sent me some flowers, which was nice, the PR department.
That's very nice of Los Angeles. Kudos to them for being nice like that.
Lisa, obviously
we brought you on to talk about the Kings and the Ducks, you know, Southern California's teams. One team doing better than the other, the Ducks, you know, decent start to the year, 15-10-5. The Kings struggling a little bit more, 14-12-2. But a lot of people would say that that's not bad, given that they've lost Jonathan Quick and have pretty much, as they came out and said earlier today, going to lose him for the majority of the regular season. You know, can the Kings continue to tread water with Peter Budaj and with Jeff Zatkoff? Or do you think that eventually the absence of Jonathan Quick is going to catch up to them?
Well, I think that this trip will really answer that question, I think. The hope was tread water, stay within distance, you know, be in contention to, you know, be around to make the playoffs, and by the time, you know, not be too far out of it. You know, the Sharks won today, I believe, right?
And yeah,
so
they won
in the
shootout.
The gap is 7 points now. So I think they have to be a little concerned, especially after last night. I think Peter Budaj has done a fantastic job. I mean, he had 23 consecutive starts, you know, appearances, and, you know, he's doing the Iron Man thing. And, you know, it's going to catch up to him at some point. I really do think so. And it was interesting, all this news, you know, came out today in Buffalo after they practiced. And I actually spoke to Dean Lombardi on the phone before they flew off to Detroit, and I can get to that in a second. But, you know, Buffalo's where they had another big moment. The year they won the Stanley Cup, Jonathan Quick injured his groin in Buffalo right before overtime, and maybe in overtime a couple years ago. So, anyways, it has not been a kind place for them, to say the least.
You know, Lisa, you mentioned you spoke with Kings general manager Dean Lombardi. How difficult is it for Dean Lombardi, the position he's in? Jonathan Quick isn't coming back until February, and they've had salary cap issues. And you look at some of those other goaltenders that are out there, whether it's a Ben Bishop or Marc-Andre Fleury, they haven't played that well. So what do? Do you go after a goaltender via trade and possibly have to move some salary around? How difficult of a situation is this for Dean Lombardi?
Oh, I think it's an extremely difficult situation, and he did talk about that. You look around. First of all, there's not that much out there. You know, you try and go after somebody's 1A, and, you know, it's all well and good for the team, you know, Kings to inquire about a guy, but, you know, teams, he said to me, teams are looking at what's happening to us with an injury and say, oh, God forbid our number one guy goes down and we don't have anything. We don't have anything in the pipeline. So there's that. There's that issue. There's the cap. You know, they do not want to mortgage the future. They had made a couple of trade deadline deals that did not work out well. So yeah, he's you know, it could be worst case scenario could actually be March. They're hoping February, mid February, but worst case scenario could still be March.
Anže Kopitar, he got a goal yesterday, his first since late October. The stats sheet tells us a pretty obvious story, 3 goals on the year, but has his play been that pedestrian, or is he just not getting the bounces?
I think he's just not getting the bounces, and somebody, you know, I'm sure somebody has the number out there on how many posts he's hitting, he's managed to hit. So you know, everything's tracked. So, he's doing the little things right. He's, you know, incredibly responsible in all areas, and, you know, Daryl Sutter's not throwing him under the bus by any means. Dean Lombardi, that's another thing we did talk about today, and he said, you know, it's just goaltending is the obvious thing people look at. That's the glaring thing, you know. But he said there's very few players on our team that are you know, playing above their heads. And he said, and he mentioned the World Cup guys. He said none of the World Cup guys, you know, they've sort of been struggling.
Lisa Dillman, our guest on NHL This Week, she covers the LA Kings and the Anaheim Ducks for NHL.com. Lisa, Jeff Carter, after last night's game in Buffalo, you mentioned that bad loss. Jeff Carter, pretty vocal, pretty passionate, pretty brutally honest with his comments, calling the team fragile. A fair comment? I mean, if it's coming from the dressing room, you have to figure it's, and it's coming from a pretty respected leader in that dressing room, you have to believe there's a fair bit of validity behind those comments.
Yeah, it's not a word. I've covered him for a few years now, and I don't believe I have ever heard him use that word. And the funny thing is, I looked at the entire unfiltered transcript, and there's some words that were said that I obviously cannot say on the air. and I was, you know, my eyes were, I was, whoa, I was surprised, because Jeff is an individual that does not speak to the media very often, but when he does, he's very precise, he's very on point, he's very measured. And, you know, they had a team meeting afterwards. I don't think it was a very long one per se, but they did have a meeting. As open as he was about everything else, somebody asked him what was said in the meeting, and he said, "Hey, that's our business. It's not yours." I'm paraphrasing him,
sure.
But for him to use the word fragile, that surprised me. That surprised me. I you know, even the captains in the past, well, Dustin Brown, you know, and Kopitar, but I Kopitar now, Dustin Brown previously. I cannot remember Dustin Brown using the word fragile. I could be wrong. My memory could be gone here, but it does mean something coming from somebody like Jeff Carter. He's not a loose cannon. He's not a guy that pops off and has to apologize to everybody 2 or 3 days later. So for him to say something like that really does resonate.
You know, Lisa, moving over to the Anaheim Ducks now. San Jose won earlier tonight, so the Anaheim Ducks are second in the division right now. Are you surprised at the way they've played on the defensive side of the puck? This is one of the best defensive teams in the league last year, and this year they've struggled as far as their D-core goes and their goaltenders.
Well, I think surprised maybe a little, but if you have to think about it, the way they started the season with the you know, the holdouts. You know, Hampus Lindholm wasn't available. Randy Carlyle comes back. I mean, everybody, you know, talks about his return, but when in fact there are very, you know, few players on that team that were on the team when he was there previously. So it's a matter of, you know, the new guys getting used to his system, you know, Randy looking at the roster and figuring out what's going to work, what's not going to. In fact, it's been an incredible turnover from opening night on October 13th at Dallas till last night. In fact, the TV ran a graphic and the names, it's like, it's almost a third has flipped over. You know, they sent some guys down to San Diego. They had to bring other people up. There's certain guys that are really Randy Carlyle, greedy type guys that are here now. And then, of course, they didn't have Ricky Raquel or Hampus Lindholm in that first game to start the season, and now they're back. So I think it's a period of adjustment. They've always, you know, they've been a team to me. You know, I've not covered them as closely over the years as I have the Kings, but the Ducks really do seem to be able to flip the switch and turn it on at will. They looked awfully good at home. I saw their three games here when they won all three of their homestand, and you know, the power play, three goals against the Senators. You know, they were clicking on all cylinders finally.
You touched on Randy Carlyle 2.0, of course, with him being in Anaheim after winning that cup in 07. He said that he's changed his approach a little bit. Have you noticed any of those changes, even the way he interacts with people?
Well, the practices seem a little shorter. you know, you guys know him as well, probably even better than I do. But he so far, he seems a tad, I wouldn't go as far to say Randy Light, but he seems a little bit mellower, I guess, if you can sort of say that. I've known him for a long time. I get along with him quite well, probably because I've never been the primary beat writer. You know, I've never had to be the person asking him a question he hates. Who's starting in goal tonight? He loathes that question, maybe even more than Daryl Sutter. So we've had a very, you know, friendly relationship. You know, he was pretty candid. We talked after the post-game scrum with the TV cameras, and we chatted for a few minutes in. We talked about Corey Perry's scoring struggles at the time, and he had broken out of it that night. And he said, maybe it's our fault. You know, we've moved the power play around. Ryan Kessler's been the guy in front of the net. Perry has not been. You know, maybe we do have to change that. And actually, that has sort of changed since then. So he was sort of, you know, I wouldn't say taking the blame for the scoring slump, but he was sort of mentioning things like that. So, you know, I think he probably has mellowed. And no offense to my friends in Toronto. I love them all. They're all my great friends. They're fantastic. But he's probably relieved to be in a slightly mellower media climate out in California.
Yeah, you don't have to, if you're going to say something negative about Toronto, you don't have to preface it with anything. This is a Winnipeg radio station. Go off. Yeah. We're fine with that.
Yeah, I know it's really late back there, though. Some of those guys might be listening to me.
I'm sure Randy's liking the beaches, too.
Yeah, safe to say that in terms of cantankerous coaches, 1-1A in terms of Carlyle and Sutter, or what?
I know, and I guess I've been able to get along quite well with both of them. Well, Randy really never left Southern California. Every time I was flying off to Toronto to visit people, I'd run into him in the airport a couple times, and you know, he kept a place down near San Diego. His sons, I believe, work down there. So he did keep kind of a significant presence in the Southern California area. I would see him at games. I'd see him in the press box back by the dessert cart. You know? So, you know, and I'd say, and he made it. You know, I was convinced he wanted to get back into hockey and into coaching. And I was wondering if it was going to happen, and, you know, it has. So it's interesting how things work out.
You know, Lisa, you mentioned Rickard Rakell earlier, and he's playing on that top line with Ryan Getzlaff and Corey Perry, who have been staples of that top line. And we're pretty familiar with Rickard Rakell. He was pretty good in the playoffs against the Jets a couple of years ago. And you mentioned that, you know, he had that contract dispute and he had those visa issues. Mm-hmm. He's got 17 points in 19 games. Is he one of the more underrated players in the league right now, maybe partly due to the fact that he's playing in Anaheim?
Yeah, I would say so. I think if he's in a market in the Midwest even, and he would get quite a bit of attention, let alone Canada. I mean, he'd be a god in Calgary. he's a low-key kind of guy, too. He's very self-effacing. His first game back, I believe, was against the Kings at Staples Center, and he had a tremendous game. It was one of those games where you could see it was pent up. He's been wanting to play. He got out there, and he wasn't quite as good in games two or three. And I said to him, I said, hey, what do you do for an encore? He looked at me, he said, what does encore mean? And I'm like, okay, of course there's language difference. And I'm sort of pausing, trying to figure out how to explain it. And then Eric Stevens from the Register jumps in and says, how do you follow this up? What do you do next? And he answered the question. But he's been phenomenal. Yeah, he's been a very, very nice compliment to them on that top line.
Lisa Dillman covers the NHL for NHL.com. Lisa, appreciate your time and your insight this evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thank you. I remember I used to come on, you guys. We even talked about the Clippers back when I used to cover basketball. So,
that was when we had the Illegal Defense basketball show as opposed to the Illegal Curve hockey show.
We go back a long way.
We do. We're going to miss you here, though. But, you know, you still have to come by every now and then.
I promise. I would love to get back there for the playoffs, because that the Anaheim Winnipeg series was one of my favorite ones to cover. Bruce Boudreau and Paul and Maurice. I mean, we couldn't have it any better with the quotes coming out of those two coaches.
Yeah, you couldn't transcribe the quotes quick enough. I promise you that Winnipeg Jets fans here in the city would love to have another playoff berth. Time will tell if that's going to happen this year or not.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure, Lisa. Thanks for joining us. Let's head to break. When we come back, we discuss Sidney Crosby. 50-50? Is it going to happen? Talk about it next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Daly to Letang to Malkin, the shot off the post. Crosby scores out of midair.
Some guy named Sidney Crosby, may have heard from him. Tremendous start to the NHL season here. Looking, trying to score 50 goals in 50 games. He's got 21 goals in his first 23 games. So you have to pick up the pace just a little bit. He would need 29 goals in his next 27 games to get to the 50 goals in 50 games mark, something that has not been done in a quarter of a century since Brett Hull did it 25 years ago with the St. Louis Blues. Possible? Is this still a record that is possible in this day and age in the NHL? Or is this just one of those records that sort of falls by the wayside, that the game has sort of sucked the life out of this record?
Well, first of all, based on the pace he's on, anything's possible. Do I think it's going to happen? I'll say no. But I didn't. When's the last time we saw a guy on this kind of pace? I mean, this pace has him scoring 51 in mid-February?
Yes, it would be February the 16th. If he was to get his 50th game...
Which is against Winnipeg, isn't it?
It is. His 50th game is on February 16th against the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah.
Even if he's got, at that point in time, if he's 10 goals away, he could still get it against the Jets on that one night.
By the way, why does Pittsburgh always play the Jets in Winnipeg in February? I remember going back to the 90s.
That game's in Pittsburgh.
Oh, okay.
I don't think it's going to happen.
But I remember I remember as a kid, my favorite player growing up was Mario Lemieux.
Yes.
I have a Mario Lemieux jersey. And I remember when Pittsburgh was in town, it was always January or February.
And he was never playing.
And he never played.
Oh, he never played.
He played like once or twice.
Very rarely did he ever play in Winnipeg. That was always his night off. The rest was back.
But it seemed like, I always thought it was funny because it seemed like Pittsburgh was always in town on the coldest day of the year. Penguins.
And even when he was playing against the Jets back in those days, he'd coast all game at like Mario would, and sure enough, you wouldn't notice him, and at the end of the game, 4 points.
You know, Joel, going back to Sidney Crosby, though, I've told this to Drew many times over the last month and a half. You know, we always talk about what we're going to put in the show plan here, and I don't think what Sidney Crosby is doing right now is being talked about enough across the NHL. This is a guy who won the Stanley Cup, he's won the World Cup this year, and he missed the first six games of the season due to, let's call it...
Concussion-related
prevention.
Yeah.
Symptoms, right, Drew? Yeah. And he's missed six games, and he's averaging 1.4 points a game, which is his career average, by the way, 1.3, 1.4. Mm-hmm. 33 points in 24 games. He just got another point here a couple hours ago. The Penguins just won. And, you know, he's a guy that you expect, obviously, to get more assists than goals. But last year, he still had 36 goals, which was, you know, top 10 in the NHL. He hasn't had 50 goals since 2009, 2010, the year after they won the Cup, Joel. But, I mean, he's not going to score 50 goals in 50 games. I mean, he's not going to keep up this pace. But I think he could score 50 goals on the year. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. I think at this point in time, if he doesn't get 50 goals on the season, it's probably disappointing.
Well, yeah. And I mean,
assuming he's healthy.
But, I mean, you know what I'm saying, though, guys? I mean, this guy is doing everything right now. We know he's the best all-around player in the game right now. And, you know, I realize that, you know, Connor McDavid is coming up here, and he's eventually going to be the best offensive player in the game if he isn't already. But what more does this guy have to do? What I'm saying is I don't think we're appreciating. I mean, I think Sidney Crosby in 2016 is Wayne Gretzky in 1984. So I think he's playing that well. He's playing at a level that is just head and shoulders above the rest of the league.
You know, that type of competition fuels athletes. Do you think that what Crosby is doing right now is his Trudeau salute to the talk that Connor's getting?
Hang on. I just want to stop you for a second there. And you said you just used the word Trudeau salute, in exchange, as opposed to the middle finger. That's well done. I salute you for that, not the Trudeau salute.
Do you think that's
Joel's not even a liberal, so
I tip my hat to you there, Joel. That was a great comment.
Do you think that's his way of just saying, like, "Hey, I'm still around, guys"?
Yeah.
It fuels somebody, right? He's been known as the best, and everybody, so other people are getting the attention. He's just, all right, I'm going to go rifle off all these goals. I mean, and to your point, he was on a heater last year.
Yep.
After Sullivan took over, he had, a handful of goals? And he put up 31, 62 points in, the final 55 games?
It's unbelievable.
Cup. So he's been on this heater for the calendar year. But this season specifically, I understand what you're saying. Not enough people are talking about it, and I think it's because of the emergence of some of these younger guys in the league, and I think that
absolutely
might be his way of saying, like, hey,
yep,
I'm still around.
We saw Patrick Laine was briefly leading the league in goals. We've seen Austin Matthews come into the league, score four goals in his first game, Drew. Mm-hmm. Connor McDavid is the leading point getter in the NHL right now. But Sidney Crosby right now, I think without a shadow of the doubt, is the best player. And, he to me is the MVP of the NHL right now. And it's incredible to be a hockey fan at this time right now with Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews, Patrick Laine, Jack Eichel, these guys coming into the league. But Sidney Crosby, I mean, he's going to hit 1,000 points in a couple months.
Yeah.
Ovechkin's going to hit 1,000 points in maybe the next couple weeks.
And we're going to talk about that on Saturday's IC Hockey Show.
It's incredible. It's an incredible time to be a hockey fan right now, the numbers that these guys are putting up. Yeah. Because, all the talk, a couple years ago when Jamie Benn won the Art Ross Trophy with 87 points is, are we ever going to see a 100-point guy again? I think there might be three or four this year.
Yeah, I think based on the pace, you're probably right, Ez. And I think, Joel, you do make a good point that, Crosby is – not that he's resentful of the attention the young kids are getting, but at the same amount of time, he's like, okay, yeah, you young kids are great. You're not me.
Yeah, I'm still here.
And he's not sitting there, he's not being fueled by Connor McDavid or the attention
Connor McDavid gets. It's just, you're an athlete.
You're an athlete. You're right. So I think he sees, that kid's good. He's going to be real good. And one day he might be better than me, but slow down. That day is not today. This is still my yard. I'm still the big dog.
Yeah.
I'm still the defending Stanley Cup champion or we won the World Cup. Everything about it, I think he's still saying, I'm Sidney Crosby.
Yeah.
Chill, everybody else.
He's conquered every challenge. Initially people said, he's more of a playmaker, can't score. Boom, 50 goals, gets the Rocket. Can't play defensively. Starts blocking shots. Every check mark is there for him to be the best player in the world until he chooses to not be the best player in the world, which is likely when he hangs up the skates.
It was about a year ago, mea culpa. I had said about a year ago when Ezzy and the aforementioned the dear departed Mr. Pollock were doing either the Saturday show or the midweek show. And I said, is one of the storylines maybe for the rest of the year? Because remember, Crosby and the Penguins were struggling for the first 3 months last season.
Yep.
Was one of the storylines that we might be seeing a little bit of a diminished Sidney Crosby?
Well, not only
I asked that question. Yeah.
No, but it was fair.
It was a fair question.
After 20 games.
It was a fair question.
By the way, if you go back,
season.
I said it wasn't the case.
Yeah, you and Richard both lambasted me, but that's standard operating procedure.
No, but Drew, I mean, regardless, the Pittsburgh Penguins, not only was Sidney Crosby struggling,
the Penguins
were
struggling.
Three or four years there where year after year, the Penguins were going out in the first round, right? And, they had trouble with the Islanders there and the Blue Jackets going back 3 or 4 years. But, I mean, I go back to, what a time to be a hockey fan right now. Mm-hmm. Just, next time the Pittsburgh Penguins play, if you have Game Center or NHL Center Ice, just watch how good he is and the things he does on the ice with or without the puck.
Yeah.
I mean, he is really... I think he's a magician out there, really. I think we haven't seen a guy like this since Wayne Gretzky. And Connor McDavid is obviously 19 years old, and he can do some pretty special things on the ice, too. But, wow, when you talk about playing at a high level, night after night, Crosby is scoring and doing things on the ice, whether that's winning faceoffs. As Joel mentioned, he blocks shots. He does it all. He makes other players around him better. Just ask Connor Sheary, ask Chris Kunitz. it's a great time to be a hockey fan. I think hockey is in a great place right now.
Let's head to break. We'll talk about potential destinations, landing places, if you will, for a veteran who might be on his last legs in the NHL. Talk about it next. We'll tell you about the veteran's name coming up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Games played.
Is that Aerosmith?
Yes.
It's a great tune.
Saw them at the old arena.
You're great, Drew.
Thank you, Izzy.
How were they? 03.
At the old arena.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Acoustics were never that great there.
I want to see Aerosmith if they ever come
back.
Do you
know what GNR has?
I don't have tickets.
Okay.
But
but I'm planning on sneaking into the stadium.
Yes.
First band I ever saw. I think I was 11.
94?
It was earlier than 94. At the old arena, 91, 90,
the
92.
The User Illusions Tour?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wasn't the spaghetti incident?
No, it was not.
The spaghetti incident was actually you at the old spaghetti factory.
That's right. I was eating a lot of spaghetti. They called it the spaghetti incident. No, I was still in elementary school. I was in grade 5 or something.
And Sheldon let you stay up that late.
Sheldon, yeah. It was good parenting. Sheldon came to the concert with me. You know,
he actually was there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Well, he wouldn't let me go to. I was 10 years old. He wouldn't let me go to a Guns N' Roses concert by myself.
Yeah. There's like syringes flying everywhere, and
I worked at the spaghetti factory, by the way.
Really?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So did
my mom. It's one of my favorite restaurants at the Forks now. Love
it. What's your go-to dish?
Well, always spaghetti and meatballs.
That's it, eh?
Just yeah. Yeah.
Unlimited.
I assume you work at the one at Fork. My mom, she always she worked at the original one on Bannatyne.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
okay.
So, you know, I get to hear all those stories.
Like, Joel, to me, it's like if you're going to the old spaghetti factory and you get anything but spaghetti, like, it just doesn't make sense. It's like, you know,
their lobster,
it's like, you know, it's like going to McDonald's and getting a salad. Like, these people that go to the drive through and get a salad, it's like, get a Junior McChicken. Get some nuggets. You're at McDonald's.
Or be Ezzy and get both.
Yeah.
Should mention that this segment is brought to you by our friends Matt Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
You know, Drew, maybe Rory and I will go. Maybe tear it up in the mosh pit or slash a snake pit.
Can I get into the segment at this point in time? Are you done
interrupting
me?
You brought up Guns N' Roses.
Only after you interrupted me with your Aerosmith, asking if the music was Aerosmith. I mean, I was quite prepared to dive headfirst into the actual segment.
Right.
So as I was saying, thank you, Ezra, 27 games played.
That's sweet emotion right there.
It wasn't sweet emotion.
No, but what you were just showing us was sweet emotion.
Shut up. How about that?
You're living on the edge.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about
this
Iggy.
This is going to be hate in the studio, not love in an elevator.
Let's get into Iggy.
3 goals, 4 assists, 7 points in 27 games played. 39 years old, 1,502 career NHL games.
Surefire Hall of Famer.
Surefire Hall of Famer, Jerome McGinley is. The Colorado Avalanche, by all signs, he's not long for the Colorado Avalanche because they don't have a need for him at this stage in their season.
Well, they're not going to make the playoffs.
They're not going to make the playoffs. Yeah. Who knows what they're doing? That's a separate issue.
Unless they win 10 games in a row here.
Yeah, they're not making the playoffs.
Would you rather run the Avalanche or the Canucks?
They're both poorly run by guys with ties to BC. Joe Sakic, of course, you know, being a Vancouverite.
Yeah, Burnaby Joe.
And Trevor Linden played for the Canucks. So they're both bad organizations being run by guys who seem to be in over their heads.
Yeah.
Separate issue, though.
Okay, yeah.
Totally. Iginla.
Yep.
Is there a market for him? You know, do you think that, you know, when the for sale sign is placed on Jerome Iginla, as it supposedly has been by the Colorado Avalanche, do you think there's going to be a market for a guy who's almost 40 years old, still searching, still desperate to get that elusive Stanley Cup, but hasn't really performed to the level necessary to account for his salary?
We've talked about Jerome Iginla before this year, Drew. I mean, he had 22 goals last year. Jerome Iginla is one of my favorite players of all time. I know I talk about this a lot, but I mean, this guy, I mean, still, I don't think gets as much respect as he deserves for the way he's playing at his age. And I realize Jaromir Jagr led the Panthers in scoring last year, but Jerome Iginla had 13 power play goals last year.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of power play goals. And, you know, has he become a little bit one-dimensional? Has he slowed down? Sure, of course. There's other guys on the Avalanche now that are counted on for the goals. Nathan MacKinnon, Matt Duchene, you know, Mikko Rantanen now, Gabriel Landeskog, on and on and on. To answer your question, and Sean McIndoe, a.k.a. Down Goes Brown, had an article in the Hockey News about that, you know, five possible destinations for Jerome Iginla, and he had Edmonton in there, and he had Montreal in there.
Yeah.
I think we know that he's not going to get traded within the division. I wouldn't expect him to be traded to Chicago or St. Louis, for example.
Why not?
Why not? What are the Avs?
The Jets traded Ladd to Chicago.
Sure, that's a fair point, but I would expect maybe, you know, we don't see trades happen within division. Okay, fine. I personally don't think it'll be a central division team mm-hmm. for various reasons. Chicago has salary cap issues, obviously, but and Dallas doesn't need him for goals. I mean, Dallas's problem is in goal right now, right?
Sure.
And on defense. So, I mean, I was looking at, you know, some of the teams here, and I thought about, you know, Pittsburgh, and he was briefly on the Pittsburgh Penguins. They're not having trouble scoring goals. I look at teams like maybe the Washington Capitals or the Tampa Bay Lightning that could use that right winger to play on the third line or the fourth line. I think there's going to be many teams, Drew, that want Iggy. And that's simply because he can still put the puck in the net on the power play. And, you know, he slowed down a little bit. But this is Jerome Iginla we're talking about. So if you want to compare this to a situation like Brad Richards when he went to Chicago and he won the Stanley Cup, you know, in one of his last years in the NHL,
mm-hmm.
I think that's what we're looking at. You know, Brad Richards was a few years younger. But I think, you know, teams closer to the trade deadline, Joel, mm-hmm. are going to want to acquire Iginla for that veteran experience. And also because he can still score.
Yeah, the link to Edmonton was a little juicy based on, remember when...
And he's from Edmonton.
Well, remember when he got shipped to the Penguins at the deadline a couple of years ago or before the deadline, everybody thought that he was going to Boston?
Yep.
Yeah.
Remember Boston, and boom, right at the last second.
He pulled the plug on Boston and ended up in Pittsburgh.
Who was running Boston back then? Pete Chiarelli, who's now Edmonton.
Sure. Yep.
Wonder if he'll go after that one again. Whale.
You think that Chiarelli doesn't hold – you think that there's no resentment there?
No, it's not that. I just meant
– Yeah, I know. You said it would be sort of ironic after not going to Boston, you know, back – you know, I guess that was what?
Now he's chasing him again.
That was the lockout season. So what was that, 3 years ago now?
Yeah.
Yeah, where he ended up in Pittsburgh.
Chasing him again. But to answer the question, I think Montreal would be a nice fit. I agree with that. It's on Tampa Bay. And then I guess we'll just have to see the way the standings shake out here in the back
Montreal,
half of the season.
You know, Montreal's also mentioned by Sean there in his Hockey News article. And, you know, I don't think Montreal's problem right now is on the right side. I think it's more at center and overcoming Galchenyuk and Desharnais' injuries. I look at a team like Ottawa. You've got Mark Stone and Bobby Ryan there. But, you know, maybe you put Iginla on your third line on the right wing, you know, down the stretch.
Sure.
I think you could probably name off 10 different teams right now, Drew, that would want Jerome Iginla. And again, he's 39 years old, but like I said, 22 goals last year. I mean, 22 goals is not insignificant.
Even out west,
if you have a struggling power play, he's the guy you'd want to acquire.
And he's only got 3 goals this year, so he's struggling,
but
he's playing, you know, reduced minutes. He's not playing big-time minutes for the Avalanche.
Imagine him on the Sharks. Imagine Jumbo Joe and Jerome Iginla both holding the trophy at the same time.
Yeah. Sure. Well, I think his foot speed is an issue, but when you're on the power play, your foot speed isn't as significant because you have the man advantage.
So
he can't keep up with some of the kids nowadays, but a crafty veteran like that, I think, will be sought after right at the deadline. Yep. If you need, you know, a third-line winger or third-line scorer and some power play expertise.
And you're probably not going to have to give up too much to get him, right? He makes over $5 million, and closer to the trade deadline, that'll be, you know, less significant as far as the cap hit. But I don't think you're going to have to give up a first-round pick to get Iginla.
Well, probably not a first-round pick. But again, it depends on what the market, you know, what the market bears and when you want to get him. I mean, the Avalanche are probably, you know, if you want Iginla now, call Colorado. That's what Elliot Friedman said in his most recent 30 Thoughts column is, you know, if you're interested, if you have interest in Jerome Iginla, please contact the Colorado Avalanche.
Yeah,
Avalanche know they have no use for him at this season. Yeah. It's a lost year already.
I still think, you know, there's going to be a roster freeze here coming up shortly, but...
Oh, I don't think it's going to happen before...
I think it happens in February.
Yeah, because nothing...
At the earliest.
Because the NHL doesn't make any trades anymore. So I think you're probably right. I don't think it necessarily happens right at the trade deadline, but I don't think it's going to happen next week.
Which who knows how this year's deadline is going to be just based on the upcoming draft, well, the expansion draft. How many players are going to be moving? Who's going to want to acquire a player if they're going to have to then protect that player, right?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, who knows the amount of activity
he has a no-movement clause currently, but if he waives it, he can waive it to go to whatever team he wants to. Like, he has that built into his contract now, but he could change. Well, he did a number of years ago when he had that no movement clause in Calgary.
And guys, we don't know if this is going to be Iggy's last year in the NHL. You know, he could end up playing one or two more years. We certainly didn't think Jaromir Jagr was going to be playing this late, but regardless if it is his last year or not, one of the best guys in hockey. You know, you think of that smile when you think of Jerome Iginla. I always think of that year in 2004 when the Calgary Flames almost won the Stanley Cup. And the fight with Le Cavalier. I mean, this guy, 17, 20-plus goal seasons. I think he scored 12 times. He scored 44 times. Scored 50 a couple times. What a career for this guy. So, you know, hopefully he does get traded to a playoff team, and maybe he does get that elusive cup.
It would be good for him. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about Guy Boucher's rant in Ottawa. We'll do a score update on the out-of-town scoreboard. Much more to come. You're still listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Final segment of tonight's NHL This Week. Reminder, Saturday, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show goes at 9 a.m. on this fine radio station. We'll get you set for Sunday's Jets-Avalanche game. We'll look back at tomorrow night's Jets-Panthers game as the Jets head into a crucial part of their schedule. 2016 quickly coming to an end. The Jets need to put pedal to the metal to make the remainder of the 2017 season valid and meaningful, because they're quickly running out of time for that. Quick look at the out-of-town scoreboard on a typically quiet Wednesday night in the NHL. Currently underway in Calgary, the Lightning, what had been a struggling Tampa Bay Lightning team, laying a lickin' on the Calgary Flames, a 5-1 Lightning lead over Calgary early in the third period. Brent Johnson being pulled out of the net. Brian Elliott gets the third period for the Flames, as it's been a bad night for the hometown team in
Chad
Calgary.
Johnson.
Yes, Chad Johnson. I knew when I said Brent Johnson that didn't sound right to me. But you know,
Ocho Cinco.
Yes. Chad Johnson. Thank you, Ezzy. Exactly right. So the Lightning up on the Flames by a good margin. In Colorado, the Flyers look for their 10th win in a row late in the second period. The Flyers and the Avalanche are deadlocked at 2. Delzato and Simmons for the Flyers. Bork and Duchesne for the Avalanche. That game's going to come down to the wire. Earlier tonight, in a shootout in the nation's capital, the San Jose Sharks defeated the Ottawa Senators by a 4-3 margin. No word yet on how Guy Boucher feels about that performance and if it's going to lead to a fiery rant that we're going to play for you momentarily. As one final game in Pittsburgh, where the Penguins defeated the Bruins 4-3 in overtime. Brian Rust gets the overtime winner at the 124 mark, as the Penguins improve to 27-3. The Metropolitan Division continues to churn along with yet another victory for the Penguins.
You know, Drew, you just mentioned that the Sharks won again tonight. You know, they've quietly moved into second in the Western Conference. So they've won 3 in a row here. Brent Burns, 13 goals on the season. you know how big of a fan I am of Brent Burns. So the Sharks are playing really well right now, 10-4 at home.
Yeah, a very good team, the San Jose Sharks, picking up where they left off as last year's Western Conference representatives. Ottawa Senators, off to a decent start this year. I think they're in a playoff spot right now in the Atlantic Division, 16-11-3. I think most Senators fans would take that as a pretty good record.
I think so.
As coming off a disappointing year last year,
yeah.
Guy Boucher, the new head coach, wasn't very happy with his team's practice and his team's performance in their last two games, where they'd been outscored by a 9-2 margin prior to tonight's last loss to San Jose. Here's Guy Boucher from practice a couple days ago.
It's this guy's job. Because if he's stuck there and I'm going too, what do you think happens? The middle's wide open. That's your job. F3's job is the middle. The middle is what we can't give, and that's F3's job. Let the D do his job. Too many games in a row, this guy leaves his job.
He didn't seem happy there.
I love that.
So hold on, Joel. I'm sitting in the middle here in the studio. Does that mean that I'm F3?
Well, what's going to happen now? Every time you say something stupid on the show, we're just going to play that rant about the guy in the middle.
And you're going to tell me to do my effing job.
I tell you that all the time, but usually it's not being broadcast on national television.
I realized that Guy Boucher was obviously fired up there. I love that. I love to see that in coaches. I love to see that in Patty Roy in Colorado. John Tortorella is another guy that gets fired up. I love to see that.
That's been going on forever.
Yeah.
And it just so happens that, in the last decade or so, cameras and social media and camera phones are there to catch it.
You walk in there, you set up your tripod, you set up your camera, and you record all practice.
And again, the Senators lose 5-1 to the Anaheim Ducks. Are you expecting the coach to be happy?
Exactly.
I mean, he's not going to be happy. He's probably going to bag skate the guys or make sure that his message is getting through whichever way he can. So, I mean, Guy Boucher, I think, is doing a great job here 30 games into the season with the Senators.
Yeah, what do you want? Take the whole team out to the malt shop and scrimmage the whole practice? Really?
I like it. I got no problems with it. If it's warranted, it's the kind of thing, though, that coach can't do over and over again.
No.
He has to use it very periodically, because if he turns into a raving lunatic, the team tunes him out.
Yeah, you do every once in a while, and the coach means business, right?
Yeah, exactly right. And, he sees something that he's upset about. I'm sure that he did his. I'm sure this isn't the first time he's addressed it with the Senators. He tried in different ways to get them to focus on their assignments better.
You know what I thought was really funny, Drew? Mike Hoffman, who's quite the sniper there for the Senators, he played for Guy Boucher in Drummondville of the QMJHL, and he said that I've seen him at his maddest, but today he was pretty bad.
So,
this is the way Guy Boucher is, right? He's he's an emotional, fiery type of guy. So, I have no problem with that at all.
For the record, after I just wrote off the Calgary Flames, they've scored twice in the last 21 seconds to now make it a 5-3 game against the Tampa Bay Lightning. So thank you to the Calgary Flames for making me look stupid.
How many of those goals were from Michael Frolik?
None. They got Michael Ferland and TJ Brody.
Former Wheat King Michael Ferland.
Yes, and of course a Manitoban.
Yep.
Scoring bunches.
What's that?
They score in bunches, those guys.
The Flames are, they do score in bunches. So that'll be an interesting ending there to see if Tampa can hold on, because they were, it was a team that's struggling, the Tampa Bay Lightning, so far this season. Out of the playoffs, everybody expects them to turn it on, but, they had a 5-1 lead. If all of a sudden you lose a 5-1 lead, that's going to be a very sour taste in the mouth of the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yeah,
still lots of time to go in Calgary, 15 minutes to play.
What's going on there? Obviously they've had a couple of long seasons. A couple of years ago they go to the Cup. Last year, conference final. No captain right now with the injury. Are we just looking at maybe this team being tired from the last couple of years? Are they just, Is there something missing?
Yeah, well, and
the goaltending.
There's something missing. His name's Steven Stamkos.
But they went to the
without him.
Deep playoff run last year without him, right?
Well, I think Droll. You think of 2 years ago with the LA Kings, and nobody on the LA Kings wanted to talk about it. But you had that Olympic year in 2014, and then you had the long playoff run. They won the Stanley Cup, obviously, and the next year they missed the playoffs, right? So I don't think Tampa Bay is going to miss the playoffs this year, but that could be a factor. And they obviously missed Steven Stamkos, Drew, but the goaltending, it could probably be better.
I think the uncertainty, there's some part uncertainty of it. There. Yeah. Ben Bishop you know, doesn't expect.
He hasn't been good this year.
Hasn't been good this year. Doesn't expect to be there long term. Doesn't necessarily expect to be there after the season. What's going to happen with the expansion draft?
Yeah.
I think there's some uncertainty, but I'd be surprised if the Lightning. You know, remember last year they weren't great. They didn't, you know, they sort of snuck into the playoffs and then they got hot at the right time. Yeah. I expect the Lightning will be fine, but they've been struggling this year so far.
Yeah,
I mean, it's perfectly reasonable, not an overwhelming surprise. Like you said, there's a lot of miles being played on a lot of those players, particularly since the World Cup and the Olympics and everything else.
Yeah.
So that'll be an interesting team to watch again. Another one of those teams where, you know, the Jets haven't seen yet this year.
We
talked to Lisa Dillman about the Anaheim Ducks, haven't seen them, haven't seen the Columbus Blue Jackets. They're coming. Tampa Bay, the Jets will be in Tampa right after the New Year to play the Lightning.
I don't know what it is about those Florida teams because last year, I mean, as Joel mentioned, they went to the semis last year, Tampa, and Florida won the division. And this year, I mean, both of these teams are in danger of missing the playoffs if they don't turn it around, so...
Yeah, it'll be interesting. You know, the Jets, another team, very much in danger of missing the playoffs if they don't turn it around.
I mean, the Florida story is a lot easier to describe. I mean, they had that 12-game heater that got going last year, that they went 12 in a row. You had Jágr, Barkov, and Huberdeau. They combined for 75 goals.
It was arguably the best line in hockey.
Yeah, they had 184 points, and so far this year, Jágr's got 6, Barkov's got 6, and, you know, who knows what's going to happen? You've been doing by the time you actually return. So, unfortunately, that's what's going on with them. They can't even put the puck in the net. They have one 10-goal scorer, which is Marchessault.
Yeah. Well, you know, you asked George Richards earlier in the program, Joel. You asked him about Nick Bjugstad. And I know Bjugstad had been injured to start the year. But I'll be honest, I didn't realize he's got 0 points in 11 games.
This is basically his training camp. And even though, like you said, he's been able to ride the bike and keep the legs going, you know, when you have a hand injury, you can't do anything.
Yeah, even, I mean, but zero. I mean, Nick Bjugstad should be able to fall, you know, behind backwards.
It's also a byproduct of the entire team. Really.
Yeah, the entire team's got to be better, Drew. I mean,
the disarray, you know, that word again.
Well, it is. I mean, and it's not, I'm not trying to pick on the Panthers. I'm really not. But when you have dysfunction in an organization, and this goes for a hockey team, this goes for a corporate office, this goes for absolutely anything. When you have dysfunction, it's hard for your players, your employees, to perform at the level necessary to be at their best.
Yeah.
Because they don't have faith in the leadership and they don't have faith in the guiding light of the organization.
I don't know about all of that. I mean, Florida can still turn it around here, Drew. I mean, I
expect that they will.
And, you know, the coach has been fired, unfortunately. Gerard Gallant loses his job, but I think they still have time to turn it around. Hopefully, you know, for the Jets, it doesn't start with a win tomorrow night. But certainly there's so much talent on that roster that it's too early to count them out.
Look, I agree with you, Ez. I don't think that it's time to count them out. But you mentioned it, Joel. It was this time last season where the Florida Panthers went on a long road trip and reeled off 12 wins in a row.
Yeah.
They're quickly, you know, they've started this road trip poorly. In Minnesota, being embarrassed last night by the Wild. They've made all these changes. They have to come back to play what should be. I mean, if the Jets aren't desperate tomorrow, if they're not a desperate Winnipeg Jets team, then the problems with this Jets team are deeper rooted than I think.
Mm-hmm. It's a big game. They got to win it.
You have to be the more desperate team. And in sports, oftentimes, the more desperate team will win when the talent levels are relatively equal.
Yeah.
And I would say the Jets' talent level and the Panthers' talent level is relatively equal.
Right.
Sure.
So if you're not desperate tomorrow,
right,
and if they're listless tomorrow like we saw in Calgary or like, you know, we saw less so in Edmonton, but if you're listless and you can't defend your home ice, the problems for this Winnipeg Jets team are going to reach a crescendo.
It's similar to that 5-game road trip where they lost all the games. They got to stop the bleeding. Doesn't matter how you do it, you got to get the 2 points tomorrow.
That's it for this Wednesday edition of NHL This Week. A big thank you to our guests, George Richards of the Miami Herald and Lisa Dillman of NHL.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the funniest place in Winnipeg, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. If you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes, on TSN 1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com.
Big props to producer Rory, doing a great job behind the board. For Joel Marcoux, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. And until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck.